be. Numbers 32. And we're going to look at this topic today, and I don't know if we'll be able to cover it in its entirety, but that's one of the blessings if you're running a series like this. If you don't get everything, we can just take it at our pace and finish it up next time if we need to. Numbers 32, we're going to be looking at second best this morning. Second best. And Numbers chapter 32 has a very familiar verse in it that we probably won't get to today, but that's all the way down in verse number 23. Numbers 32, 23 says, "But if you will not do so, behold, you've sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out." Okay, but what is the context of that verse, all right? That is in the context of the general topic of second best, or I can say it this way, the other side of Jordan. All right, Numbers 32, beginning verse 1. "Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle, and when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, behold, the place was a place for cattle. Children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Eliah and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. Wherefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, Shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? Wherefore, discourage ye the hearts of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them. Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land." All right, we'll stop there. We'll pick it up as we get into the flow. But you see here the idea of second best. In Numbers, we're not given the narration that led up to this event, okay? But it's introduced in verse 1 when these tribes saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, okay? I threw the map up here for you, and let's see here if I can blow that up just a little bit. All right. The land that we're talking about, right? If you've been here for the series, we've been talking about when they came up from Egypt, which would be to the lower left here, and they came around this way. They went around the land of Edom. God told them, "You're not to mess with Edom. That's the descendants of Esau, your brother. I've given them that land." All right? Well, then up a little further is Moab. They were not to mess with Moab. I mean, Moab and Ammon were the descendants of Lot through the incestuous relationships there with his daughters, but nonetheless, they were related. And so they were not to mess with them. So they're coming up and around this way, and then they're going to be coming across Jericho's right near the top of the Dead Sea there, okay? But the land that we're talking about today, if you know, when they went around Moab and around Ammon, this land that we're talking about with Gilead and Jazer and that sort is what's in the gray or bluish gray there that's marked Jordan. And then the yellow section there to the right of the Sea of Galilee, okay? We're talking about that section, the yellow section on this side of the Sea of Galilee. And then you see that Jordan is actually the Jordan River, but the gray is the area. On the left-hand side, you have a legend, if you can read it. But the yellow part was given to Manasseh, the gray part to Gad, and then that brown part to the half-tribe of Reuben. Okay, so the two and a half tribes that we're talking about this morning, that's the section. Okay, so just bear that in mind. Notice, however, in all of the discussions leading up to this, how is the promised land presented? It's the land beyond Jordan, across Jordan, the land beyond Jordan. Okay, the main part of what God was going to give them, or I can say it this way, what God was going to give them first, okay, was this side between the Jordan River and the Dead Sea over to the Mediterranean. Okay, that section there was the first section that God was going to give them. I mean, as we know, you know, once they got in there, they got spread out. You know, there weren't enough of them necessarily to fill it all up completely at the time. And God would have allowed them to increase normally, and then as they needed to expand, they could have expanded, okay? But all of the references to the land that God was giving them was going to be across Jordan or beyond Jordan or on the other side of Jordan, okay? That was the primary piece of land, which is why when I refer to this passage, I say second best, or I could say man's wisdom or self-will or any number of references to this passage. But, I mean, how did they obtain this land? We're not told that here. So let's turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 2. Deuteronomy chapter 2, and we're going to just breeze through. We're not going to read every verse. I will let you go back and do that on your own. But in Deuteronomy chapter 2, we have the story behind this land. But, I mean, it's significant. Right? Deuteronomy is kind of a rehearsal. Deutero is second, Namas is law. So Deuteronomy literally means second law, or it's the second repeating of the law. Moses, at the end of his life, he's reviewing the history and the main points of the law and that kind of thing. All right, Deuteronomy 2, verse 3, the Lord spake to Moses and said, ye have compassed this mountain long enough, turn you northward. All right, this is the narrative when the wilderness wanderings begin to draw to a close and they begin to move north. From down below this would be the Sinai Peninsula, all right? If you can't read the words, that's okay. If you see the two little rabbit ears, that's the two forks of the Red Sea. The Sinai Peninsula is what's in between those forks, okay? So they were wandering in the wilderness, which is, you know, down below the purple and green. That general area down there is the primary area for the wilderness wandering, okay? So when God says, you've compassed this mountain long enough, turn you northward, they're going north from the wilderness towards the land of Canaan. Notice how I artfully avoided calling going northward the promised land. That's just hard for me to do. Thought I would, when I talked about going northward, I thought I'd get an amen from Brother Joe over here, but he was very disciplined, okay? But nonetheless, when we talk about go northward, they're wandering in that general vicinity of wilderness. And God said, all right, you've compassed this mountain long enough, turn you northward. And that's when he begins to talk about Esau. Your brother and the children of Esau, which dwell in Seir, meddle not with them, they're told, right? So that's Edom, okay? And then the next one down, or the next section down, they're told not to mess with Ammon. Verse 19, when thou comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them. Okay, then we get down to verse number 24 of Deuteronomy 2, which is what I want us to look at for the purpose of this study. Rise up, take your journey, pass over the river Arnon. Behold, I've given into thine hand Sihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to possess it and contend with him in battle. All right, in general terms, that would be, well, let's see here. Let's blow it back up. That would be more in the region of the brown and blue-gray, okay? That would be more in that region. Sihon, the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. This day will I begin to put the dread of thee and the fear of thee upon the nations that are under the whole heaven, who shall hear report of thee and shall tremble and be in anguish because of thee. All right? And they sent messengers and said, hey, let us pass through. We'll pay for what we use. And they said no, and they came out with the army. Verse 30, Sihon, the king of Heshbon, would not let us pass by him, for the Lord thy God hardened his spirit and made his heart obstinate, that he might deliver him into thy hand as appeareth this day. The Lord said unto me, behold, I've begun to give Sihon and his land before thee, begin to possess that thou mayest inherit his land. Then Sihon came out against us, he and all his people, to fight at Jahaz, and the Lord our God delivered him before us, and we smote him. We took all his cities at that time, utterly destroyed the men, the women, the little ones of every city. We left none to remain. Now, does that sound different from, you know, what we've looked at previously in the last few weeks? Okay, they did not destroy the Midianites like they should have. And Moses was very angry with them. You left these women alive, and they were part of the very temptation that dragged Israel into sin. So apparently, chronology-wise, I'm not sure if this came before or after, but in this case, they did it right nonetheless. They wiped out everything, verse 35, only the cattle we took for prey unto ourselves and the spoil of the cities which we took. From a roar which is by the brink of the river Arnon, and from the city that is by the river, even unto Gilead, there was not one city too strong for us. The Lord our God delivered all unto us. Only the land of the children of Ammon thou camest not, nor to any place of the river Jabbok, nor unto the cities in the mountains, nor unto whatsoever the Lord our God forbade us. Jabbok, where have we heard that before? No, I'm not talking about Star Wars. Okay. Where have we heard that before? The river Jabbok, or the ford Jabbok, or the creek Jabbok. You got it. Okay? That is where Jacob wrestled with God. Okay? So that would have been in that general vicinity, east of the Jordan. Okay? But that ford or river Jabbok was the border of the children of Ammon. Okay? So that's the section we're talking about. In Deuteronomy chapter 2, God told them in verse 25, "This day will I begin to put the fear of you in these people." Okay? God is beginning the process. You remember when the spies went into Jericho? What did they say? You know, "We've heard about your God," right? "We've heard about your God and all that he did." And you know, they mentioned Egypt and the Red Sea, but they also mentioned Sihon and Og. Right? Well, that's the two that we're going to briefly mention today, okay? But this is God beginning to prepare them. You know what God's doing? He's given them victories to confirm for them that he can do what he said he was going to do. This is while Moses is still alive, okay? God's allowing Moses to be a part of the transition here to help establish them in the promises of God. But you remember, God told Moses, "I'm not going to let you go over into the land that I promised because of your sin." Okay, so what does that tell us? The primary land that God wanted them to have was on the other side of Jordan. Okay, this all goes together when we begin to make application of this idea of the other side of Jordan, or second best. Okay, so God begins to make an example. Sihon, God allows him to fall. Deuteronomy chapter 3, verse 1. "Then we turned and went up the way to Bashan. And Og, the king of Bashan, came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Edrei." All right, now you can look it up in a Bible encyclopedia or other reference and get a general idea. But, you know, depending on who you look at, you might get, well, it could be this or it could be this. The scholars try to connect the dots, so to speak, with archaeology today. It could be this archaeological site or it could be this archaeological site. I'm not worried about that, okay? I'll find out when I get to heaven. I know the general region, and for the purposes of this study, that's close enough, all right? Not that it doesn't matter, but I don't need archaeology to discover something before I can believe that the Bible record is true. That's what I'm saying, okay? It's really, really nice when the discoveries of science or history or archaeology do confirm for us the Bible record. But whether they ever find it or not, I don't need that in order for me to believe the Bible's God's Word. And you shouldn't either. I mean, we should believe that the Bible's the Word of God and take it at face value, regardless of if science or archaeology or whatever ever confirms this. That's really the point that I'm referring to here. All right? But Og, king of Bashan, all right, in general terms, we're talking about the part on the upper right that is in yellow, that general region. Okay, if we go down a little bit further, verse 8, "We took at that time out of the hand of the two kings of the Amorites the land that was on this side Jordan from the river of Arnon unto Mount Hermon, which Hermon the Sidonians call Sirion and the Amorites call it Shinir. All the cities of the plain and Gilead and Bashan and Salcah and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og in Bashan." Okay, that whole section, it goes up to, you know, up above the little dot there at the very top is a different sea, but you see there that it's marked the Sea of Galilee. You know, Israel's primarily the Sea of Galilee, and then you got the Jordan River, and then it empties into the Dead Sea. I mean, that's what we're most familiar with. But the Jordan River issues out of the mountains further up in the north. Okay, some of those mountains up there, interesting, just at the top of the Dead Sea is, I thought I could remember it so I didn't write, Golan, that's what it is. Just at the top of the Dead Sea not the Dead Sea, the top of the Sea of Galilee, up that way in that general area, is what is referred to today as the Golan Heights. Okay? That's the border between Israel and Syria. That's where Russia is putting troops right now. You know, on the Syrian side facing Israel. Sound like the bear from Ezekiel and Daniel and Jeremiah and Revelation? Yeah, it does. I mean, a significant portion of Israel's military might when it comes to armament and tanks and that kind of stuff is there within striking distance of that region, because that's where the most imminent danger is from when it comes to military armament. Obviously, they get rockets from the West Bank and all that. That's, I'm getting sidetracked. All right, but I'm just trying to help you kind of connect the dots, okay? In the general region of what we would call the Golan Heights, and east of there, that was the general region that they took out of the hand of Og, king of Bashan. Okay, these areas of some of the mountains, some of it was plains, so it appeared to be rolling hills and some flat spots where you could have cattle, and obviously there's some water there and that kind of thing. Might look a little bit like North Carolina, right? Okay. And depending on how much rain you've had, it may or may not be green like North Carolina. But that's the area that we're talking about. Notice in verse 11, for only Og, king of Bashan, Deuteronomy 3:11, only Og, king of Bashan, remained of the remnant of the giants. Behold, his bedstead was a bedstead of iron, is it not, in Rabbath of the children of Ammon. 9 cubits was the length thereof. Okay, a cubit. Kind of a standardized measurement. It was the measurement from the elbow to the tip of on a man's arm. You know, that was the measurement, but it kind of in a standardized way, it's 18 or 19 inches. Let's use 18 because it's easy math. So if it's 9 cubits, translate that to feet for me. 13 and a half feet, okay? His bed was 13 and a half feet long. You know what that makes it? King size. I know, that was bad. It wasn't California King, but it was close. So, all right. But, you know, along with this, we don't want to skip over the fact that God is not only beginning to give them victories, but he's showing them whether it's a little king or whether it's a giant, if God has promised to give them the land, God can give it to them. Okay? So Og was known as one of the remnants of the giants, so that would have been significant when the people of Jericho and the people of Galilee and the people of Nazareth and all, when they begin to hear about these people, that would have been significant to them. That would have been an enemy they probably didn't want to mess with. But God is laying a foundation, okay? At no point in this story here do we see where God said, all right, I'm ready for you to divide up the land, okay? It just says, here's the land that we conquered. And it's that general section, the brown, the blue, gray, and the yellow on the east side of the Jordan and the east side of the Sea of Galilee, that general vicinity, okay? That God gave that to them, but he wasn't ready for them to possess it yet. Now, from a human perspective, was it pretty easy to say, man, we've been wandering in the wilderness for 40 years? I don't think I'm going to find anything better over there than what I see here. Man, let me just settle down here. Is it hard to fault them for that? From a purely human perspective. I mean, I'm going to not be so hard on them from that aspect. All of us would be tempted to say, ooh, that looks nice. That'll work. That's nicer than this tent I've lived in for the last 40 years. Let me just stay here. Now, apparently, based on the account we have in Numbers 32, they all had cattle. I mean, they all had sheep and goats and cows and that kind of thing. But apparently, these tribes had significantly more than everybody else. I mean, they were the cattle tribes, if you will. Some of them were probably more the woodworkers. And some of them, you know, with the different skills and emphases, they all basically had to farm to live. It wasn't like our society today, but they had large numbers of cattle. So they looked at this and said, ooh, this would be great. Now, Would there have been anything wrong with them? I'm going to put it in our terms, okay? Would there have been anything wrong with them praying about that, saying, God, well, I'd love to have this if you think this is what, this looks like it'd be perfect. Would you give this to me? Is this what you want us to have? Would there be anything wrong with that? No, of course not. But they looked at it and they said, ooh, hey, this looks like a good idea. Let's go do this. Okay? And when they went to Moses, what was Moses' first response? All right, so this is the area, this is the conquest in Deuteronomy chapter 2 and 3. Let's go back to Numbers 32. If nothing else, maybe turning pages helps you stay engaged a little bit this morning. All right, Numbers 32. It says, verse 1, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, had a very great multitude of cattle, and when they saw the land of Jazer, the land of Gilead, behold, the place was a place for cattle. Children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses. Okay, so who initiated all this? The tribes did. God did not initiate that. All right, that's why, you know, I'm saying this wasn't, God may have given them that land later, but it wasn't God's time. Okay, they're getting things out of order. But they went to Moses and said, hey, we want this. All right, Moses' response was very passive, right? Not at all. Okay? Moses' response was very passionate and with good reason. Okay? Verse number 6, Moses said unto the children of Gad, to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war? And shall ye sit here? I can understand that. What do you mean? Who fought for this land? Did just these 2.5 tribes fight these battles? Or did the whole army fight these battles? Okay, the whole army fought these battles. And now you want to say, hey, we'll just take this and y'all go fight for the rest of it? I don't think so. I mean, that is completely understandable. But Moses has the long view. He has the overview perspective, if you will. And he says, why are you going to discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going on to possess their land? Okay, and he compares it to the spies. When he first sent the spies in and the spies came back, and if we would go back to Numbers chapter 13 and review that account, we would find it almost the same way. It says that the people were very discouraged at the report of the spies. Okay? Moses said, why are you trying to discourage the people from going to take the land God's given them? Okay? So, it's hard for me to fault Moses. Okay? Did Moses, we're not told here, because they come back with a counteroffer. All right? Moses said, no, you're not doing that. In fact, he basically called them backsliders and cancer, and he called them, you know, a stumbling block. That's basically what he said. Look, you're just as bad as those spies that made us wander in the wilderness for 40 years if you do this. Okay, Moses has a pretty harsh little sermonette for him right here. Okay? Verse number 13. Okay, the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all the generation had done evil in the sight of the Lord was consumed. Now get this in verse 14. Now behold, ye are risen up in your father's stead, an increase of sinful men to augment or to increase yet the fierce anger of the Lord towards Israel. You're following in your father's footsteps. You're going to make Israel sin, and you're going to make God madder at us than your dad did. I mean, this is a really harsh sermon they're getting from Moses. Verse 15, if ye turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness, and ye shall destroy all this people. Moses' point, you know, as far as it went, was accurate. Okay, verse 16, they came near unto him and said, all right, now and then they're going to come back with a counter proposal. Okay, there's no indication in the text of Scripture that this was their original idea. Okay, this may or may not have been their original idea. But, I mean, I'm just going to make an observation from human nature. Okay, have you ever made a proposal and, you know, you thought, hey, this is a really good idea. You make a proposal to mom, to dad, to your boss, to your friend, to your whatever, and it's not received the way you thought it was going to be received at all. And so on the fly, you kind of make an adjustment. We can do this, and it can still work, right? Yeah, I think that's what happened here, okay? Because there's no discussion of, They didn't come and present this as part of the plan. They just said, hey, can we have this? Maybe Moses cut them off and jumped in with a sermon before they had a chance to finish, but I don't think so. Okay? I think that this is a counterproposal. And so they come back with a modified arrangement. Okay? Verse 16, they came near unto him and said, I mean, the idea there to draw near, right, what tells me either they had gone and huddled up and talked about it, and then they're coming back to Moses, or, you know, as Moses' sermon is going on, they're kind of, stepping away and looking for the lightning or fire from heaven. You know, that sermon that Moses gave them wasn't what they thought they were going to get. Okay, but they come back with a counter proposal. Okay. Verse 16, they came near unto him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones, but we ourselves will go ready armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them unto their place, and our little ones shall dwell in the fenced cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return into our houses until the children of Israel have inherited every man his inheritance. Verse 19, for we will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan. Right? That's a statement of their will or their desire. In other words, we do not wish to or we do not will to inherit on the other side of Jordan. We want what we want right now. We will not inherit with them on yonder side Jordan or forward because our inheritance has fallen to us on this side Jordan eastward. Who made that determination that their inheritance was falling to them on the east side of Jordan? Did God make that determination? I heard it. They did. Exactly right. Okay, they made the determination. So this entire deal was done out of man's wisdom, out of man's desires. This was not God giving it to them. And we'll never know if God would have given it to them later, but he wasn't going to give it to them now. That's 100% for sure. Okay, this was man's wisdom, man's reasoning. Hey, we just want it here. Okay, so Moses said unto them, if you will do this thing, verse 20, if you will go armed before the Lord to war, and all of you armed over Jordan before the Lord until they've driven out his enemies from before him, all right, then I'll give you the land. Okay, end of verse 22, this land shall be your possession before the Lord. If you will not do so, you've sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. All right, so we see the context of that. But let's back up, okay? Why would we say that this is second best on the other side of Jordan? Okay? God, in all the references that they have was to the promised land was the other side of Jordan. Okay? When God told Moses he would not let him see the land that he'd promised, it was the other side of Jordan. When the spies went in, it was the other side of Jordan. That was a section that God was going to give them at that time. Okay? This was connected, it's adjoining, it's not too far away, that kind of thing. But what do you have? I mean, with the Jordan River there, the Sea of Galilee, and that whole Jordan River chain, okay, geographically, what do you have? You got separation. You got a natural border, okay? You got a natural divide. So they, with not having the transportation in the same way that we have today and the ease of movement, all of those things, I mean, just being over there provided a natural divide between them and the rest of Israel, okay? But in doing that, that also put a separation or a divide between them and the house of God. Okay? The tabernacle was going to be set up in the main part over there. Okay? Now, this was presumption on the part of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh to ask for this based on their own reasoning without, you know, they'd already decided and without consulting God. Okay? They said, look, we have lots of cattle. This will work. Okay? But notice this. Without whether they realized it or not, there was a disregard, probably unintentional, okay? But there was a disregard for the presence of God, the promises of God, and the protection of God, okay? The presence of God, symbolized by the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle and all of that, was going on over into the land. So there's a separation from the presence of God, if you will, that whether it was intentional or not, because, you know, Moses had said, all right, look, God's going to begin to give you this land to inherit, maybe like, okay. But all the references have been to the other side of Jordan, and they're settling. Okay? Hey, let's just settle here instead of going on. Now, how in the world would that apply to us today? Okay? Have you ever been tempted to say, well, I'm doing enough. I don't need to go on and do more for the Lord. Okay? I'm mature enough. I don't need to grow. Hebrews says, you know, let's set aside the milk and let us go on unto, what's the word? Perfection. Let us go on unto perfection. Perfection not being sinless perfection, but rather perfection in the sense of completeness or maturity. Okay? So, Paul, the Apostle Paul, and, you know, we have the inspiration of the Holy Spirit to validate this, but he said, not as though I had already attained, either were already perfect, but I follow after. That word follow after means to pursue, like a hunter would pursue his game. Okay? So, that is the necessity of the New Testament Christian life, is to follow after, it is to pursue, it is to go on to maturity. Okay? It is to continue to grow or to continue to seek and enjoy the presence of God. But it's very easy to say, well, I'm far enough. You know, I'm far enough. The old Puritans had what they called a halfway covenant. That is, folks that were in the church, that had made a profession of faith, they'd been baptized and so forth, they were full members of the church. But you got to understand, when America was first founded, the Puritans, it was a church state. It was a Church of England all over again in the U.S. Okay? So it was through the church that you had the rights of citizenship and voting and all that kind of stuff. But when the second generation wasn't as interested in the church, you know, then they came up with this halfway covenant to say, well, if the parents are members, then the kids can be baptized and they can be members, but they can't take communion and be full voting members until they make their own profession of faith. But basically they were trying to say, all right, the kid, you know, they don't really want to be in this, but we want to try to get them in. So they were halfway members, right? Not interested in the you know, Anglican or the Congregational Church or that kind of thing, but while we would theologically totally refuse that, there's some halfway Christians in a lot of churches, okay? And, you know, there's some people that don't want to be halfway Christians that fight with the temptation to kind of slip back into being a halfway Christian. I mean, you're looking at one, and I'm looking at some, okay? It's not that you necessarily want to be that way, but our flesh wants to drag us that direction, okay? To settle for what's easy instead of what is God's best and to go on. Instead of saying, well, hey, this is good enough, let's stay here, God said, no, I got more. And that meant more fighting before there was more inheritance, more work, more blood, sweat, and tears, more problems and that kind of thing. But that's where God wanted them to go, and it was their own wisdom to say, hey, we just want to stay here, okay? There was no, there wasn't in their initial presentation a sense of what I would say honor or do, hey, God promised us that land, let's go get it, but, you know, when we get ready to divide it up, can we come back and have this? It was, hey, we'll just stay here. It was only when Moses just sharply rebuked them that they came back with the compromise and said, all right, wait a minute, how about if we get everything settled here where it's safe for our families and then we'll go over? Now, in certain ways, was this really brilliant? I mean, from a protection standpoint? Hey, let's leave all the women and children and cattle over here. Let's go across the Jordan and let's go fight for another 2 to 5 years and leave all the women and children exposed over here. Is that brilliant military strategy? Okay, I'm not an officer in any branch of the military, but I can tell you that's not smart. Okay? So there's a lot of reasons why, you know, just from a practical standpoint, this should not have happened. But you know, they're like, verse 19, our inheritance has fallen to us. Can I translate that to 2015 for you? I've prayed about it, and I think it's, you know, I have peace. God is leading me to stay here. You know, without any other corroborating evidence, without any other statement other than, you know, basically that's kind of the 2015 answer when you don't want people to question you. I have peace about it. Okay? That's kind of the spiritual kryptonite. Okay, now you're not allowed to question me anymore. All right? Our inheritance fallen to us. You know, it's really easy to look at things, make a decision, or justify things because it looks good to us instead of taking in the full picture. What does the Word of God say? Where should we approach? Okay? what's the application that we take home today? Okay? Number one, I don't want to be a halfway Christian. And I hope you don't. I think the vast majority in here have no interest in being a halfway Christian. You're all in. But we've got to constantly fight that temptation to slide backwards. Okay? Number two, we can't shy away from God's best because it looks hard. And I'm not necessarily talking about getting into a closed field like China or somewhere like that. I'm just talking about praying consistently, witnessing when you have an opportunity. I mean, those things are hard and they require effort too. But if we look at them and draw from their example, let's don't settle for second best. Let's seek God's best, God's complete best, and go at it wholeheartedly. Lord, thank you for your word. Thank you for the example that you've given us to follow. And Lord, I pray that you'd help us to be complete.